also want to read a clip from Professor Yonemar Bonilla's book, Aftershock of Disaster, where she and co-editor Marisol Lebrun write, quote, "Since Hurricane Maria made landfall, Puerto Ricans have found themselves relentlessly jolted by the storm's aftershocks. This happens every time systemic failures are revealed, death and damages are denied, aid is refused, profiteering is discovered, and officials who were not elected by local residents make drastic decisions about the island's future. Aftershocks remind us that disasters are not singular events, but ongoing processes." We just are going right now back to Yarimar Bonilla. The studio that we were talking to her in San Juan has just lost power. Professor Bonilla, we have you on the telephone. Describe the scene right now.
Yes, what has become a regular occurrence here in Puerto Rico. We lost power and the generator, you know, took a hit. So we're still waiting to get the generator back up.
And what kind of word are you hearing from hospitals? The head of the electric company said most have electricity restored, but this is so incredibly dangerous at a time like this.
Yes, I think the part of what's important to distinguish between now and Hurricane Maria is that it's a little bit more geographically contained, the infrastructural damage. You know, the epicenter is in the southern coast of Puerto Rico. And I know a lot of folks, you know, who have family here are worried about their family members throughout the island. But really, it is mostly in the southern coast where people are sleeping outside, having repeated tremors, et cetera. In the northern coast and the rest of Puerto Rico, we are feeling some aftershocks of the earthquake, but it's mostly infrastructural issues such as this. And the roads are a little bit better here, so we don't have the problems that we had in Maria of people not being able to get to a hospital and of supplies not being able to get to people. So it's a little bit of a better situation, even though it's a nerve-wracking in a different sense.
Well,
unlike Hurricane Maria,
we'll leave it
we don't
there.
Know when.
I thank you so much for you joining us again. The studio just lost power in San Juan as we talk about the aftershock of the earthquake. Yarimar Bonilla of CUNY. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. It's a little after 5 o'clock, and coming up is the evening news.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2019-20 concert season. Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor kick off 2020 on Friday, January 17th. They are co-lead singers and primary songwriters for the Grammy Award-winning O'Connor Band. That's Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, Friday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m., doors at 7, at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, KBOO community. Tonight's Development Committee meeting has been canceled and will be rescheduled to later in the month. The rescheduled meeting date will be announced on KBOO as well as on our website at kboo.fm. If you have any questions about joining KBOO's Development Committee, just email our Development Director at development@kboo.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, disability benefits rules are changing, and that could affect hundreds of thousands.
President Trump plans to veto a bill that limits cancer-causing chemicals in our water supply.
And in international news, a measles epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo has killed over 6,000 people.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 8, 2020. I'm Nat Moon.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. The Trump administration is proposing changes that would add a new layer of scrutiny to disability claims. Under the proposed change, the government would look more closely at whether certain disability insurance recipients still qualify as disabled, even after they have already been awarded those benefits. While recipients currently have to demonstrate their continuing disability every few years, this proposal would increase the scrutiny, potentially forcing still eligible beneficiaries out of the program. According to the Trump administration, the extra reviews will help, quote, maintain appropriate stewardship of the disability program, end quote. The administration is also arguing that current rules do not account for the possibility of medical improvement. A letter from a group of congressional Democrats led by Massachusetts Representative Richard Neal responded, quote, "We are concerned that under the proposed rule, some individuals subject to review will be simply unable to navigate the process and, as a result, lose their benefits even though there is no medical improvement," end quote. The rule change could affect hundreds of thousands of disability benefit recipients. The administration did not estimate how many people would lose benefits, but did say the proposal would save the federal government $2 billion over a decade.
A measles epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo has killed more than 6,000 people, according to the World Health Organization. Over 300,000 suspected measles cases have been reported in the DRC since last year, and a shortage of funds remains one of the primary obstacles in curbing the spread of the disease. Other obstacles include military conflict in the area and widespread mistrust of health systems. The WHO says it has vaccinated 18 million Congolese children under the age of 5, but routine immunization remains extremely low among the more than 88 million residents of the country. Measles is a highly contagious virus that spreads through coughing and sneezing and can live in the air for up to 2 hours. In addition to the preventable and devastating spread of measles throughout the region, the DRC is also battling the second largest and deadliest Ebola outbreak in history, with over 400 cases reported, including 245 deaths.
The White House announced on Tuesday that it plans to veto the PFAS Action Act of 2019. The PFAS Action Act aims to keep harmful chemicals known as PFAs, often called forever chemicals, out of groundwater around the country. These so-called forever chemicals are a class of heat and water-resistant chemicals used in many products, including nonstick pans, flame-retardant furniture, and raincoats. The carcinogenic chemicals have leached into water supplies in almost every state in the country and are called forever chemicals because they remain present indefinitely in the environment and human body. PFAS chemicals are known to cause cancerous tumors, with epidemiological evidence linking exposure to the chemicals linking the chemicals to kidney and testicular cancer. Much of the PFAS contamination is connected to military sites and the Department of Defense, but the Trump administration refuses to admit how hazardous the chemicals really are. Environmental organizations strongly oppose the White House's decision to veto this legislation, which would require making drinking water safer. Scott Faber, Senior VP for Government Affairs at the Environmental Working Group, said in a statement, quote, "For too long, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has failed to treat the PFAS contamination crisis like a crisis. Trump's EPA has sunk to a whole new level of failure."
An estimated 1.25 billion animals have been killed in Australia's record-breaking wildfires, sparking fears that at least several species have tipped over the brink of extinction. Australia is home to more than 240 unique species of mammals, which were already threatened by invasive species and habitat destruction. Now, scientists fear severe ecological consequences from so much land being burned at once. At least 8,000 koalas have been killed in the fires, and one-third of their species habitat has been destroyed. The devastation includes the culling of thousands of camels and horses in the region due to limited water resources. The fires, which started in September of last year following prolonged drought and high temperatures, have burned 20 million acres, killed at least 25 people, and destroyed over 2,000 homes. In addition to the consequences of the fires, fine particulate matter from smoke that can penetrate deep into the lungs is present all across the region, and recent readings in Sydney have been as high as 734 micrograms, the equivalent of smoking 37 cigarettes. The air quality has led to a 10% rise in hospital admissions, where hundreds of people have complained of trouble breathing. Scientists fear the fires could continue for several more months and warn that extreme fire events like the one taking place in Australia are likely to continue occurring with greater frequency across the globe.
A rally is planned tonight in Beaverton to protest sending approximately 3,000 U.S. troops to the Middle East. The protest is being organized by Indivisible Beaverton. They are calling on the president to consult with Congress before taking any action in the Middle East. The group is demanding immediate de-escalation and an emphasis on diplomacy, including a renewed commitment to the Iran nuclear deal. They want the U.S. to begin efforts at diplomacy and peacemaking rather than continued escalation of the crisis that the president has just created. In a press release, they said, quote, "We must do everything possible to end this crisis with peaceful actions, using diplomacy, and to restore our relationships with our allies, who we are continuing to alienate as we propel the country toward another war in the Middle East. No more bloodshed and no more deaths," end quote. The protest is tonight, starting at 6 p.m. at 12375 Southwest 5th Street in Beaverton, across from the Beaverton Main Library.
The Portland City Council voted to approve a new contract for the city to resume houseless camp cleanups. The contract requires the staff of Rapid Response BioClean, the company that has been doing the cleanups for the past 5 years, to be trained in tactics to avoid violent conflict, learn to engage with people who are in mental health crisis, take CPR classes, and carry the opioid overdose reversal drug naloxone. The contract also adds language that says workers, quote, "must be polite, diplomatic, and professional at all times and treat all persons with dignity and respect. Discrimination and harassment shall not be tolerated in any form," end quote. When the weather gets cold, the cleanup crews are also supposed to function as outreach workers who check on campers' safety and well-being, distribute hand warmers and trash bags, and help them get to shelter. $4.5 million have been set aside for cleaning up camps in Portland for the next 5 years. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty added that the City Council will have a work session to discuss possible future changes, as well as hearing feedback from the community.
The Trump administration is seeking to delay a Democratic effort that would require the Secret Service to disclose how much it spends protecting the president and his family when they travel. The issue has emerged in recent weeks as Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and other senators have been negotiating legislation that would move the Secret Service from the Department of Homeland Security back to the Treasury Department. Mnuchin has balked at demands to disclose the travel costs within 120 days after the legislation passes, instead pushing for the disclosures to begin after the 2020 election. The administration's continued resistance to disclosing the amount of taxpayer money that has been spent on presidential travel has drawn criticism from many who believe the public has the right to know the price of his frequent visits to his own resorts in Florida and New Jersey. Since taking office, Trump has made more than 50 trips to his properties outside the D.C. area. According to a report by the Government Accountability Office, which serves as the congressional watchdog on federal spending, Trump's travel costs over $13 million in just 1 month of 2017. By comparison, Obama's travel cost about $96 million over all 8 years, suggesting Trump's travel expenses in his first year alone may have exceeded Obama's in total. The Secret Service has disclosed how much it spends on golf carts during the president's mini golfing outings, which amounts to over $500,000 since 2017.
Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, has announced that the House will vote Thursday on whether or not to force President Trump to quickly wind down military action against Iran, unless he is given explicit authorization from Congress. The proposed vote threatens to provoke a searing debate over presidential war powers, widening the rift between the political parties in Washington. The Trump administration's justification for killing General Soleimani last week includes a 2002 measure that granted President George W. Bush authorization to use military force in Iraq, as well as the commander-in-chief's power to defend the U.S. against imminent threats. However, congressional Democrats, skeptical of the Trump administration's rationale for the drone strike that killed Soleimani, continued to press ahead with their efforts to rein in the president's war powers. Pelosi made the announcement today after Trump said in a statement that the U.S. would back away from any military escalation against Iran. The congressional vote stands little chance in the Republican-controlled Senate, but will certainly ignite a fierce debate over Trump's strategy in Iran. As Pelosi said Wednesday, quote, America and the world simply cannot afford war.
President Donald Trump said this morning that Iran seemed to be standing down after yesterday's missile attack on two U.S. bases in Iraq. Trump did not threaten military retaliation, but did promise further economic sanctions unless Iran gives up trying to create nuclear weapons. He also encouraged the signatories of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is aimed at controlling Iran's nuclear development, to drop out of the plan like the U.S. Delivering his speech with a measured and firm tone, Trump said, quote, "The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it."
176 people died yesterday when a Ukrainian International Airlines Boeing 737 plane crashed shortly after taking off from Tehran, Iran. The crash came only a couple hours after Iran fired missiles at two U.S. bases in Iraq. Iranian authorities said they will not turn over the plane's black box, which records the plane's system status, to U.S. aviation officials or Boeing. They have also walked back on an earlier statement ruling out a terrorist attack as a cause of the crash. The passengers included 82 Iranians, 62 Canadians, and 11 Ukrainians, including the 9 crew members. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have expressed a strong desire to determine what caused the crash. The plane was a Boeing 737-800, not the Boeing 737 MAX, which has been involved in two previous fatal crashes. Also on Wednesday morning, two earthquakes struck near the Bushehr nuclear power plant in southern Iran. A 4.9 magnitude quake occurred around 9 a.m., followed by a 4.5 magnitude aftershock 30 minutes later. Iranian state media reported that there were no casualties and the plant was designed to withstand earthquakes up to magnitude 9.
A new protein made from air, water, and renewable electricity has the potential to revolutionize the factory farming and agriculture industries. Developed by Solar Foods in a lab just outside Helsinki, Finland, the protein, called Soline, is made with living microbes that are left to ferment in a process strikingly similar to the brewing of beer. The fermentation process, which, like the brewing of beer and other alcohols, takes place in large vats, produces a liquid that is removed and then dried to make the final product, a yellow powder-like substance that has multiple food uses. For example, Soline can be added to bread and pasta and can also be used as an ingredient in plant-based meat alternatives similar to the Impossible Burger. And if the electricity used to make the protein comes entirely from renewable resources like solar and wind power, the production process would produce virtually zero greenhouse gases. Soline would also require far less land and water than traditional agriculture, using just 2 gallons of water for every 2 pounds of Soline. By comparison, 2 pounds of soy requires over 500 gallons of water, and 2 pounds of beef requires over 3,000 gallons of water.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's Right to Survive, discussing the water rights in Detroit. Then at 7, we have Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is a 90% chance of rain with a low of 38. Tomorrow's weather offers a 40% chance of rain with a high of 46. Today in history, in 2011, Jared Lee Loeffner killed six and wounded 13 others, including his target, Arizona Representative Gabrielle Giffords. The quote of the day is from Giffords, quote, "In the absence of a Congress ready to act to reduce gun violence, we will keep working to create a different Congress."
Native people are weighing in on tensions between the U.S. and Iran, calling President Trump's killing of General Soleimani, quote, "reckless." With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to indigenous news, issues, and culture.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KBOO.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people are weighing in on tensions between the United States and Iran. New Mexico Democratic Congresswoman Deb Haaland from Laguna Pueblo issued a statement calling President Trump's actions that killed the country's top general, Soleimani, reckless, adding Congress must assert its power to avoid further escalation to a war that Americans don't want. While Oklahoma Republican Congressman Tom Cole Chickasaw acknowledged the action is, in his words, serious and consequential and will pose risks to American personnel and interests everywhere. At the same time, Cole says the president was right to act when he did. The leaders of the Navajo Nation released a statement Tuesday raising concerns for the safety of Navajo military service members. President Jonathan Nez and Vice President Myron Leiser said many Diné people serve in every branch of the armed forces, and the greater the situation escalates, the greater the risk to the military. The leaders urged for the U.S. to bring a peaceful end to the conflict with Iran. The grassroots group The Red Nation issued a statement demanding an end to the war. The group calls for the halting of all hostilities, amounting an international inquiry, and prosecution of what the group calls criminal behavior of the United States and its leadership. CNN has settled a lawsuit brought by the family of Nicholas Sandman, a Kentucky high school student who claims media outlets defamed him. Terms of the agreement were not disclosed Tuesday, The Washington Post reports. A video went viral in January 2019 showing the incident with Sandman and a group of Covington Catholic students and Omaha elder Nathan Phillips at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Clips flooded social media of the incident and was picked up by news outlets showing Phillips drumming and singing inches from the students. The video sparked nationwide controversy about motives and behavior of those involved. Phillips was in D.C. for the Indigenous People's March, and the students were there for a March for Life rally. Phillips says he was trying to defuse a situation between the students and a group of black people by singing and drumming. The students have maintained no wrongdoing. The Sandman family is also suing other outlets, including The Post and NBC. A new app intends to connect Native-owned businesses with consumers. From the Fronteras Desk, KJZZ's Laura Morales reports.
A study conducted by the Navajo Nation estimates more than $200 million in sales tax revenue is lost each year to towns bordering the reservation. Many Navajo business owners struggle with establishing a storefront or online presence. The Res Rising app seeks to address the problem. Singer Horse Capture helped develop it.
Res Rising could be a really great resource for tourists who are driving across Navajo, going to, let's say, Monument Valley or going to the Grand Canyon. And instead of just stopping at McDonald's, I can go to the app and search and see what food stands are open along the road at that time.
Users can search by location, item, or business name. The app features more than 500 Native-made goods and services. Everything from jewelry and tour guides to public relations firms and mechanics. For National Native News, I'm Laura Morales in Flagstaff.
A Montana tribe which recently gained federal recognition status after fighting for years will host a public celebration. The Great Falls Tribune reports the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians is planning an event for January 25th in Great Falls. Tribal and state officials and U.S. lawmakers are expected to attend. The tribe petitioned the government for the status for decades. In December, President Trump signed the National Defense Spending Bill, which included federal recognition for the Little Shell Tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wishes it was still 2019.
This year's starting off all wrong. January 1st, a local friend's bookstore was broken into with over 100 rare books stolen. Over a billion animals killed by Australian fires when what the world needs is a couple billion fewer people and a couple billion more birds, reptiles, and other mammals. 50 degrees in Portland in early January increases odds of summer drought and fires. Trump decided the best distraction from his impeachment is murder and war. 56 dead and hundreds injured in a stampede at Soleimani's funeral. Iran fires missiles at two U.S. bases in Iraq. Now it's Trump's move. Oh, bleep. Will he let the Iraqi government throw U.S. troops out of Iraq? The only thing I have in common with Donnie is the scareder he gets, the scareder I get. If we can't get a grown-up in the White House, can we at least take away the grown-up weapons and toys? My New Year's goal to drink and smoke less for health and the future seems more ludicrous every hour. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Nearly 100 county clerks in Tennessee received a letter saying they have been breaking the law by issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. The attorney for the Family Action Council of Tennessee's Constitutional Government Defense Fund, David Fowler, wrote the letter, which was sent to 95 of the state's county clerks. Fowler accuses the clerks of violating Title 11, Section 8 of Tennessee's Constitution. The section reads in part, quote, "The relationship of one man and one woman shall be the only legally recognized marital contract in this state," end quote. Fowler is representing 11 Christian ministers who are challenging the Tennessee Department of Health over the constitutionality of the state's marriage licenses. The letter demands county clerks use the old marriage certificates that were issued before the 2015 Supreme Court ruling that federally legalized same-sex marriage. However, according to Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the U.S. Federal Constitution, also known as the Supremacy Clause, federal law supersedes state laws and state constitutions, meaning Indiana's constitution is null and void in this situation.
Republicans in Indiana are introducing two bills that target transgender and non-binary people. House Bill 1088, also known as the Fair Play for Female Athletes Act, would prevent anyone assigned male at birth from competing in female sporting events. The bill is authored by Republican Representative Christy Stutzman. It is unclear whether it would only apply to public schools or also to private schools and professional sports. The second, Senate Bill 74, authored by Senator Jim Tomes, would eliminate the state's Bureau of Motor Vehicles' proposal to issue gender-neutral driver's licenses. In March of 2019, the Bureau announced its intention to begin issuing gender-neutral driver's licenses and state ID cards starting in October. However, Indiana's Republican Attorney General, Curtis Hill, refused to sign off on the change, arguing that notice to the public was not sufficient. The state's conservative legislators have also proposed a rule change that would make it harder for people to legally change their gender markers on government-issued IDs.
A unique water fountain in Milwaukee filters contaminants without the use of chemicals and prevents storm drains from overflowing, all while being aesthetically pleasing to the eye. With more on this story, it's Current Cast.
Cloud seeding to stop the rain? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Scenes of people waiting on beaches to be evacuated, burned koalas and kangaroos, wildfire smoke turning skies red. Many are wondering if these images are becoming the new normal.
Bushfires continue to rage in Australia, causing 24 deaths, the evacuation of more than 100,000 people, and the destruction of 2,000 homes.
Australia is in a three-year drought, with 2019 the hottest and driest year on record. On Saturday, the temperature west of Sydney reached a record 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
The fires are taking a huge toll on wildlife. Ecologists at the University of Sydney estimate that nearly half a billion animals have been killed since September, and News Corp Australia reports that there are concerns entire species of plants and animals have been wiped out.
Koalas have been among the hardest hit. A third of the entire koala population of New South Wales has been killed in less than 4 months.
While Sunday's conditions saw cooling temperatures and calmer winds, one official told CNN that the situation could worsen in the coming days.
The Trump administration is planning to roll back protections for water by abolishing limits on how much pollution can be dumped into small streams and wetlands.
The Los Angeles Times reports that more than 80% of the streams in the Southwest will lose protections. New Mexico could be hit the hardest, with 96% of its waterways and wetlands left unprotected.
The proposed rule eliminates protections for ephemeral waterways like washes or arroyos, where water flows only occasionally. These types of streams are common in the West, and with aridification from climate change, it's likely there will be more of these intermittent waterways.
The Obama administration had adopted a rule that would restrict the ability of farmers to use pesticides and fertilizers on land that could drain into wetlands and streams, but ranchers, farmers, and real estate developers viewed the rule as infringing on their property rights.
The current administration repealed the old rule and now plans to replace it.
Cloud seeding is usually a way of increasing rain or snowfall in dry regions. However, officials in Indonesia are using the practice to stop the rain.
In Jakarta, heavy rains since New Year's Eve have caused floods that killed more than 60 people. Almost 400,000 are staying in shelters, as more downpours are still expected. Some places of the city were 19 feet underwater, and soldiers sprayed disinfectant to stop the possible spread of disease.
In an effort to prevent more rain from hitting Jakarta, The Guardian reports that the Indonesian government began seeding clouds so they would dissipate before reaching the city.
Daniel Rosenfeld, a professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, told Earther that tropical clouds like the ones in Indonesia carry much water, and he worries that seeding would cause them to release more rain than they otherwise would have.
Jakarta already has the distinction of being one of the fastest sinking urban areas in the world, and as sea levels rise, the government has announced it will relocate the city.
There are great hopes that hydrogen will become a main energy source as common as gasoline.
Hydrogen is plentiful, and when it's burned, it releases no pollution. But one problem is how to produce it in a cheap and sustainable manner.
In the past, hydrogen has been captured by using expensive metals like platinum to cause a chemical splitting